All right, buddy. Let me see what I can do here with this. The Night Shift, starring Scott Sherman.
What's he like, our boss or what?
No, he's the supervisor. He's not here at night.
Nah, get out of town. Just you and me and the stiffs alone here? That's going to be radical. That guy's dead.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun, though, isn't it?
Idea to eliminate garbage. Edible paper.
That's a remarkably idiotic thing that you just said.
In stupid sense. You know what I'm saying?
Huh?
Tuna fish.
Hold it. Wait a minute. Take live tuna fish and feed them mayonnaise. Oh, this is good. Call Starkist.
The Night Shift. The current affairs show for everyone.
We'll be fighting in the streets with our children.
Starring Scott Sherman.
I'll tip my hat to the new Constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Slot and green and the change all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees and pray. We don't get fooled again.
You're on the Night Shift. Here's your host, Scott Sherman.
One more time. How about that? With feeling and great feeling and gratitude, I welcome all of you into the Night Shift, the last incarnation on this particular radio station for this program. And before we get all weepy, I want to tell you that there's no crying in radio or baseball, at least certainly not on the air, because it's embarrassing. But I do want to welcome all of you and let all of you know that have been listeners either the first time, if this is your first time, or if this is one of your regular spots and stops, my gratitude to you is immeasurable, and hopefully this last broadcast, at least in this particular sort of incarnation of this show, will be worthy of your time. I'm always grateful for that. Welcome in. It's the Current Affairs Show for everyone. My name is Scott Sherman, and for the last almost year or so, we've been tackling the world around us, local, national, international, and presenting it in a way we hope you have found interesting and informative. Lots of friends, lots of guests, lots of gratitude going towards my regulars, and you'll hear from many, if not all of them tonight. We don't have a lot of time to get started, and when I mean we, I mean a man I could not do this show without, and to whom I am eternally grateful, although I usually don't say much and just leave. Ladies and gentlemen, my producer and engineer, Mr. Kyle Bittner.
Hello, Mr. Sherman.
How are you, sir?
I'm feeling good, feeling strong, ready to finish this one out.
Outstanding. Hour one, we have a very strong panel of people, as strong a panel as we could get and coax in here without some sort of financial compensation. Ladies and gentlemen, you know our sort of legal panel, our legal experts, they're tremendous. They've helped us out immeasurably. And from my sort of left to my right in no particular order, but that order that I just gave. Wait, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Night Shift. Mr. Ken Karp.
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here. And I was thinking about you during the rain today and your windshield wipers.
Outstanding. Still not fixed.
Now you have a lot of time.
Yes, now I do have a lot of time on my hands. To his left and to my right is a gentleman that we have come to know and respect, and I hope you have enjoyed his segments. And if not, he's got one more chance to do that, but he does a great job always. I never get his website right, but his website guy's here, and he's pointing a laser thing at my head. So, ladies and gentlemen, from yourtrademarkattorney.com, took me forever, ladies and gentlemen, Morris Turk.
Thanks, Scott. How are you?
How are you?
Good.
The guy can take the laser pointer off my
That's
head
right.
now. There
it goes. Kevin, take it away.
also here in hour one, a great friend, maybe the best friend in the radio business that I have. He's here not just because he is a great friend, but he's also been a great contributor. Our Tuesday ones and zeros correspondent, our tech guru, and of course the master of everything that has to do with computers, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Jose Hernandez.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
I'm good.
I'm grateful to all of you for coming in and taking Morris away from his Taco Bell to come in and talk.
Tonight was Denny's.
Oh, wow. I'm doubly honored. All right, gentlemen, let's get to it. What we usually do in hour one is something a little heavier than we usually carry in the rest of the hours, and that's why you're here. The U.S. Supreme Court has had a very busy time of it this month. They usually wait till the very end to throw their homework assignments out at the rest of us and change the world. Normally, the cases run the gamut, but it seems as though there have been a run on technology cases, privacy cases. Very excited about these. And we'll start off with one that came out earlier this week. Morris Turek, you are the intellectual property guru of the bunch here. The Arrero case, as Scooby-Doo, it's Arrero, Shaggy. The Arrero case, stealing the broadcasting and selling it to other people. Morris, tell us what happened.
Well, so, you know, Aereo provides a service where people can watch broadcast stations over, broadcast stations that are broadcast over the air on their internet-connected devices, so their tablets, internet-connected TVs, mobile phones, whatever it might be. And the Supreme Court ruled that the service that Aereo is providing violates the Copyright Act.
It seemed when I read the case that it didn't seem like much of a brainer. I believe this is a 6-3 decision, and it's written by Justice Breyer, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Hernandez, he was the justice that admitted that he didn't even know how to get into his phone, as, of course, Jose is trying to get me into my phone, so I'm not going to be too critical of him. But basically, what did the court say in this particular instance?
Well, Aereo provides some infrastructure that it's all internet connected with antennas, servers, decoders, all of these things. So basically, when somebody who subscribes to the Aereo service logs into their account, they can basically press the watch button or the play button or whatever it might be. That activates an antenna at Aereo's storage facility or whatever you want to call it, and then that antenna is activated and it picks up the over the air broadcast waves. Transforms it into a data source that an iPad can pick up and transmits it. And so the person's watching the broadcast TV or the broadcast station about 3 or 4 seconds delayed.
And this is copyrighted material, but what Arrero was arguing to the court was, hey, we're really no different than DVR. We're just providing hardware for people and the ability for them to access this. We're not really stealing.
Exactly. Aereo's claiming that they're just infrastructure. We're not performing anything. We're not transmitting anything. It's the user that is doing the performing or the transmitting of the copyrighted work by going into their account and pressing play.
All right, Ken Karp, you're a smarter lawyer than I am for sure. I'm not going to ask you details about this particular court opinion, but on first blush, this idea that this outside company is grasping or sort of catching broadcast airwaves and then putting it in a jar for other people to come and spend money on to come and either sniff or look at later. What was your blush at it or your read at it?
My first shot at it, it's out in the open. It's up for grabs. No different when the police want to come by and say, hey, it's in your trash. We see it. We can use it. If it's out in the open, it's all there. And so I guess one of the risks you have in the market when you have a commodity like technology like that, if it's out there and people can grab it, why can't you use it just like law enforcement or anyone else would use whatever they see?
Arrero's attorneys couldn't have made a more or better, more persuasive argument than that.
And I would have done it for a lot less.
Exactly. And you would have got maybe 4 and not 3. All right, Dr. Hernandez, you know exactly how this stuff works. We talked about this on the Ones and Zeros segment before.
Yes.
Do you think that the court struck this down and said you can't do this? Did the court get this right in sort of your opinion as a chief technology officer and an IT guy?
Well, ultimately, it depends on what the court's trying to strike down. Again, not being a lawyer, it looked as if the court—
It helps you, I'm telling you.
It looked as if the court was trying to say that Aero is trying to get around having to pay broadcast fees similar to what cable companies do to broadcast your local channels. And if that is all Aero is trying to do, then, yep, that's the court was correct. However, the problem is going to be that there are many technologies that use, quote-unquote, the cloud, which is how Aero delivered your television viewing to you. So this decision is going to perhaps hamstring further innovation using the cloud.
I think that that's a very fair point. And Councillor Karp, also a fair point. What I got out of this case is that those arguments that both Ken and Jose make on this, Morris, were great arguments in 1975 before Congress revamped the Copyright Act in 1976, because there were two cases involving cable TV, or at least sort of the first incarnation of cable TV, and said, yeah, that's exactly what they were doing. They were just sort of getting something that was in the air, catching it, and then selling it out on the open market. Too bad, so sad. You're not a network, cable TV networks with the creative control. You should have a block on it or more creativity. And those two cases, one was in 1968, I believe one was in 1973 or 74, they opened up the market for this sort of catch it in the air and sell it. And then what happened in 1976 is Congress came in with the help, don't forget, of CBS, ABC, and NBC and said, we're crushing these decisions. We're going to overturn it. So, Morris, isn't this really an analysis of what the 76 Copyright Act amendment was and what Congress did to crush these arguments rather than whether it's fair game or not?
Yeah, I mean, the court relied on the legislative history of the amendments to the Copyright Act. You know, the amendments to the Copyright Act were made to bring cable companies within the realm of the copyright law, so that cable companies would have to pay these retransmission fees to the networks. And basically, the Supreme Court said, "Well, Aereo, you kind of look a cable company, so you should be under the same umbrella as the cable companies."
And as someone who's really transmitting this, not only are you a company, but this goes for viewers as well. That the way they rewrote the Copyright Act in 76, it was pretty much anybody who wasn't using it for a personal use was subject to violating the new Copyright Act, the 76 Act.
Yeah, but it was definitely more focused on the sort of like the cable TV companies that were retransmitting the signal. The difference with Aereo is that they have, you know, tens of thousands, if not millions, of little antennas, and each antenna is assigned to a specific user. So the antenna is not retransmitting anything without the user telling it to transmit something, which is different than a cable company where the signal is constant. So that was one of the arguments that Aereo made.
So for people that aren't trying to sell this stuff, how is this different than the DVR case that came out a couple of years ago or even last year? How is what Aereo was doing and got smacked down for as stealing, how is that different than somebody that's got a DVR and just wants to capture it for personal use later?
Well, the DVR issue was, you know, was settled back in the 80s with the Sony Betamax case. You know, basically the Supreme Court ruled that recording something off of TV is just time shifting. You know, you're making a copy for your personal use and you're just using it to watch it later. It's the same thing with the DVR. In this case, it's a little bit different because the DVR is remote and it's being your show is being transmitted from some cloud service to your TV or tablet. I don't really think that should make too much of a difference. Personally, I think the dissent in the case got it right, where I think that Aereo is just providing an infrastructure. It's really if anybody's committing the copyright infringement, it's probably the user.
Look at this. You got two lawyers. They're both on the side of Scalia, Thomas, and Alito. How about that on this show? How about that on this show?
How about it? It's all driven by economics. Betamax, they never really assumed it would take off nearly as much and everybody would pirate it as much. And now they're trying to close the loophole. I would say maybe the 76th Amendment was really driven by giving an economic incentive to the cable companies to say, okay, you could have your proprietary interest because it's copyrighted. You can do it. Nobody else could afford to do it, and they got them in the market. Now that other people could do it affordably, CBS and the rest of them aren't all that interested in everyone else being able to do it for free.
Am I the only one that agrees with the majority here, Justice Hernandez?
I believe so.
I think we need to take a break before these three smarty pantses get me out of here before the minute. Gentlemen, part of tonight's show and all of our shows is music. So whether you like it or not, here we go. Yes. I'm very pleased three of you are here and that all of you out there are listening. We got lots of guests and surprises, and we got other court cases to hit in their little legal roundtable. We got two of the best brains in the entire legal community, Ken Karp and Morris Turek, and then the big brain around here in all of technology, our friend Dr. Hernandez, who will stick with us the entirety of Hour Number One. Boys, we'll talk a little search and seizure and a little privacy, my favorite subjects, First Amendment, and all that stuff. And the Night Shift returns right after this.
This is The Night Shift, starring Scott Sherman.
Back in The Night Shift, my favorite band, my favorite band of lawyers. And I have been emotionally and intellectually beaten up during the course of our commercials. And my fishmonger arguments, I will say, were beaten down. So congratulations to all of you for ganging up on me. Back on The Night Shift with our pals Ken Karp and Morris Turek and Jose Hernandez. All right, big case. Maybe to me the biggest case that came out of the court, they haven't given everything out yet, is this cell phone case. Cell phone case that comes out of California. The idea, there were two cases. The cops pull people over. They're arresting them. Search incident to arrest. Oh, looky here. A cell phone. What a shock. Everyone has either a smartphone or some sort of communicative device that stores information. It's ubiquitous. We've used that word on this program before. It's everywhere. Everybody has it. Nine-year-olds have it. Cops like to get hold of that stuff and search through it, and they don't want to get warrants. U.S. Supreme Court unanimously, just the other day, struck that practice down. All you police and law enforcement people out there, get your hands off people's cell phones, or you better get yourself to a courthouse and get a judge to issue a warrant. Gentlemen, first blush, your thoughts on this unanimous Supreme Court case that sort of backs privacy for the first time in many, many years on the issue of warrantless searches.
It's great that they all support me for a change. Good job. Well, at least
I agree with you on this.
I mean, in this particular case, you have an absolute right to expect an element of privacy with on your cell phone. No different than your computer in your house or anything else. Look in a police car, you find a joint there, whatever it is, that's a little bit different. But nobody has any kind of expectation that what you have on your phone is up for grabs.
Morris, were you surprised that this is unanimous? 9-0. These people don't agree on what day it is most of the time. You got Justice Thomas agreeing with the majority on this case. Your thoughts just on the fact that they all came together. Is this a statement case, really?
I think it might be. I was a little surprised. But then I thought, you know, every one of those Supreme Court justices has a cell phone. And then maybe they thought, if I get stopped, maybe I don't want the police going through my cell phone.
Especially Justice Thomas.
We
can't Justice Thomas because he doesn't talk. But just sort of the idea of what the information that's being stored on this. I mean, you're an intellectual property guy. The most vital secrets that we have in our life, we carry with us now.
Yeah, bank account information, contact information, telephone numbers. I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, like Kenneth said, you know, you have an expectation of privacy on what's on your cell phone. And unless a cop thinks that you're hiding a gun or a bomb or a weapon in your cell phone, there's no reason for them to be examining it without a warrant.
One of the most ridiculous arguments that I heard the government make in support of this illegal practice, and it's an illegal practice, thankfully, now, is that somehow it was dangerous for the police officer and they wanted to secure it. And unless there's a razor blade attached to it, like it's some sort of tainted Halloween candy.
Well, some of those cases are very hard.
Is this really
stupid? Well, you know, some of those
don't
have apps where they have a clicking of a shotgun or something like that. So maybe they refer to the apps. But there's no inherent danger in that.
No, the only danger was that they'd be looking at people's naked pictures and snooping around to see about all the stuff that cops like to do without warrants. They see, what happens is, and I'll say this and get out there and not put anybody on the spot, there are very good police officers, but there aren't enough of them. And when we say 99% of them are great, we're overestimating that. There are many police officers that wear uniforms that don't deserve the respect that uniform deserves, and they like to snoop around. They're bullies. They're
they're nosy, and quite frankly, they want to make cases where cases don't exist, and they don't want to follow the rules that they themselves swore to uphold. It's not just lawyers and judges that take oaths to support the Constitution. It's law enforcement officers, and all the first thing that some of them do, not all of them, trample all over the same Constitution that they take an oath for. And you know who doesn't back them up? Their chiefs and the prosecutors that work in the counties where they're running over people's rights. They go into people's houses late at night without warrants. They bully people into the house. And what do? Oh, look what I found here. Your cell phone. Let me put handcuffs on you and see if, 19-year-old girl, you might have some pictures of yourself. Or guy that I think sells drugs, a bunch of phone numbers of people that are innocent that you have no right to get into. And I'm sick of it. And I'm really glad that the court basically was sending a message that, hey, there's rules. You think you got a great case? Go talk to a judge. Right, Kim?
You bet. But, you know, one of the real problems is, in general, what I tell people is, if you have information, you have a tendency to use it. So, you know, if you want to know if your wife's cheating and you don't really want to get a divorce, don't find out. And so even if you have a good law enforcement person, when they see something, if they're intellectually curious, then they react. And then it goes on a fishing expedition. And so information is bad. And so you give them something that may not be incident to the real reason they stopped or whatever, but it provides a feeding frenzy. And then for the overachievers that you refer to in a less eloquent way, then they go ahead and they make up stuff.
Sorry, I didn't mean to assault.
Of course, then they go to federal prison and we let them out because we're overcrowded because...
The original case on this, Chimel, from the 1960s, was about people that were handcuffed and searching around within their grasp and in sort of the zone of control to see if they had weapons or something else, booby traps. Jose, the way things have changed in the last 10 or 15 years since the last version of these Robinson and all of these other cases that allow you to look inside the interior of a car and all this search incident to arrest stuff, the technology is so incredibly new that the whole way we use and store our private information has totally changed. Just tell people or remind people how different it was from even when 9/11 happened.
Well, sure. The difference is the technology now, it makes it simple to thwart the efforts of law enforcement. You just put a little passcode on there so that they just can't pick it up and turn it on and see everything. That would tend to slow them down because then I presume they can't compel me to tell them what the passcode is to get into my phone.
Yeah, but they always compel. It goes something like this. If you have nothing to hide, you'll tell me. And if you don't tell me because you have nothing to hide, then we'll arrest you and you can call your parents or whomever it is and tell them whatever it is. So when you talk about the coercion that goes on, you have nothing to hide, you have to tell, or else we'll arrest you.
Papers, please. And if you don't give them to me and tell me exactly what I want, and what I want is for something to incriminate you with so that you can be in real trouble later, then I'm going to throw you in jail for 24 or 48 hours and not tell you why and sweat you out and you'll get fired from your job. Or somebody will get mad at you, or they'll, you know, you'll think something bad might happen to you. All right, so Morris, now, with respect to the way in which people keep their information, especially their valuable information, do you have any tips for people, now that the police can't get it without a warrant, on how to keep it not just from the snoopy law enforcement officers, and Ken was much kinder to them than I am, but just to the other people that might be snooping around? What is it that they should put on their smart devices, and what is it that they should keep somewhere else?
Well, I mean, you can keep a lot of stuff on your smartphones. I mean, obviously, putting a password on your smartphone is a good idea. You can also buy equipment to obviously people connect to public Wi-Fi all the time. That's very dangerous. Very easy for people to hack into your phone that way. So, creating a little virtual private network using some different types of equipment can help that. All kinds of things. I mean, there's plenty of ways to secure your mobile device. So I think regardless of this case, you know, one way or the other, you'd still be putting a password on your phone, I would hope.
All right. Jose, what's the one, two, or three things that people that care about keeping their private things private, they should be doing on their phones?
Well, if you have no expectation of privacy carrying your cell phone, then you shouldn't put anything on there that you wouldn't write on a 3x5 card and post on a bulletin board somewhere to begin with. Don't carry information you think is questionable. Second of all, you put a passcode on the phone. Third of all, the VPNs are good, virtual private networks. There's also apps that you can purchase that encrypt specific portions or folders within your phone or your computer that won't that have better encryption than just the four-digit passcode to get into your phone.
All right, Night Shifters, tech questions, T-E-C-H questions at KTRS.com. If you have anything on that, I'm sure Jose would be happy to do that. And one more time here, your trademarkattorney.com, right?
Yep.
And Mr. Karp, last sort of out question here. This last court case that the court handed down on the zone of privacy on the abortion clinics, I think another sort of First Amendment winner here. This is another 9-0 decision where you have people that are completely on opposite sides of that particular issue saying the First Amendment, as I have said many times, and I'm glad they're saying it, the First Amendment is more important than how you feel about a particular issue, even the most divisive issue maybe in our social sort of parlance. Thoughts on that case? Striking down that zone of privacy, or that zone of that barrier.
I think it was actually absolutely the right decision. Actually, I don't even think it's a close case. I mean, the barrier was viewpoint discriminatory. If there were people cheering women on to go ahead and have an abortion, that law would have never existed. It only existed because of people who wanted to change women's minds. So that law was clearly viewpoint discriminatory.
Justice Scalia's clerk is with us today. Again, and there's nothing wrong with that because I think that he's right about a lot of things. Even the way that they analyzed it as content neutral, I think that this is a warning to the bozos and even the smart people and the well-intentioned people who sit on these city councils and who try to pass these ordinances, is that the marketplace of ideas is more important than whatever it is that you think you're doing by keeping your neighborhoods quiet. The public street and the public forum has shrunk so much. Everyone's on Twitter. Everybody's screaming and hollering at each other in blogs. But there really isn't a place anymore that for the traditional public forum of people to go out and say, this is what I believe. I'm passionate about it. And either argue with me or go on your way. That's our country. That's what Thomas Jefferson set up as the marketplace of ideas. And that's really, in my view, why it is that James Madison insisted on having not only a Bill of Rights, but a First Amendment.
But I think it's real fear. People don't want to express themselves. You got to be politically correct. I don't even know what that – well, most people that know me would say I don't know what it means.
If you did, you wouldn't be here.
But, you have post-traumatic stress syndrome, post-traumatic slavery syndrome, the Jewish people, which I am. We have post-traumatic Inquisition syndrome. I mean, really, the days of making a Polish joke or anything else are far gone. And then if you want to talk about a politically sensitive topic, you really can't do it because you might offend someone. I mean, really, after 9/11, I was in an airport, and a woman started to say how ridiculous it was. She waited online for an hour and a half because feet were a little bit too big for the shoes, and she couldn't get her shoes back on. And then she said, well, I guess I really shouldn't complain because they'll be mad at me. They will be. I mean, who's they? So we're really scared in a whole variety of ways to express ourselves because we may offend somebody. And hence, public forums aren't there. Hence, political or any kind of sensitivity really bars people from talking in any way except anonymity.
It's right, and it's wrong, because it shouldn't only be comedians, and these are what I call foot soldiers of the First Amendment, who should be allowed to take a microphone or stand in front of a group of people and say exactly what's on their mind. It's the First Amendment's for everybody. There aren't special rules for the press or for comics than there is for the rest of society.
But even within comics, it's extremely segregated on which comedians can say what kind of activities.
That's why I admire the ones that really go after it and the ones that over – and traditionally, whether it's George Carlin or some of my absolute favorites of all time. Richard Pryor is my favorite comedian.
But George Carlin, we go back to where you're saying something for shock value and it being funny is okay, as opposed to saying something and someone just analyzing and find something wrong. I mean, the pregnant pause in responding to what I had said right off the bat said, yeah, maybe we could address it, maybe we can't. And that's why people don't express themselves anymore.
Well, the First Amendment's there for a reason. It's first for a reason. And I think that people need to step up, say what's on their mind, and the more they get off your chest, gets it out in the open, and maybe we can come to some sort of common ground on that stuff. Gentlemen, and I do mean that for all of you, I'm eternally grateful for your contributions to this show, the intelligence and the thoughtfulness and the wit with which you brought it, even though most of the time you guys just yell at me and say I'm wrong.
You can hear it on the
show. Only on the break.
How do smart people get a hold of you two lawyers so that they can have good lawyers and not bad lawyers? Mr. Karp.
For me, it could be 314-942-3005 or Kenneth Karp at kkarplaw.com.
Mr. Karp, it's always a pleasure. Mr. Turek, how about you?
You can reach me at 314-749-4059 or morris@yourtrademarkattorney.com.
I finally got it right, didn't I?
You did.
Jose Hernandez is going to stick around through the rest of this hour. Gentlemen, I applaud you. I thank you.
Thank you.
We'll do this again somewhere else another time.
Well, good luck, Scott. Appreciate it.
Oh, now you wish me luck that I got fired. Okay. Let's take a break. More night shift. Right after this.